You're with Sounds Good on WKMS. It's our midday music and community conversation program. I'm Tracy Ross, and I'm joined in the studio this morning by Kate Lochte and Murray attorney and now author Sid Easley. Welcome to Sounds Good.
Thank you very much.
You know, Sid, we should probably do a disclaimer and say that you were once chairman of our Board of Regents at Murray State University, and you're pretty famous around the region, not the least of which because you're married to Melissa, and and because you have two great sons, Eric and Don, and we're glad that you're here today and that you've written kind of a fast reading book here called A Courthouse Tragedy: Politics, Murder, and Redemption in a Small Kentucky Town. You're a Graves County native, and that's where it starts.
That's correct. It happened on March 6, 1922. That's when the shooting happened that probably occasioned the book. It's sad that you have to find an event like this to find something to write about, but that's what interests people. And the book is not only about the event, but it's about the times. It was the 1920s, and that was a very different time in western Kentucky, all over the South, probably.
And why?
It was the time before, it was, in a sense, it was a time of innocence. It followed World War I. It was a time of change. The Prohibition Amendment was passed, 1919-1920. Women first were able to vote, which is just an amazing story, in 1920, two amendments to the Constitution, changed the world. It was prior to the Great Depression. Graves County in western Kentucky was a land of small farmers, small independent farmers, and they were reasonably prosperous at the time. And then it's also the beginning of the automobile. Because in the book, in 1922, if you went into Mayfield, it would be half horses and half T-model Fords.
So we are talking about a small county, a small city, but one very well educated, very well churched, and very well organized. And we're talking about a completely startling event that occurs at the very center of law and order in the county.
That's right. These were people who were really, it wasn't the Wild West at all. It was a very civilized community. The schools were really strong. As I point out, 8 passenger trains came through Mayfield in 1922.
Was there also booming industry?
There was in Mayfield they had what was called the woolen mills, and that was the Merritt Clothing Company and the Mayfield Clothing Company, and 1,500 people were employed in these woolen mills, and they had salesmen in every state in the Union during that time. So it was really a quite progressive community. At the time, there were about 30,000 people, and Graves County today doesn't have but about 36,000-37,000.
So we're talking about a time of relative peacefulness, prosperity, and boom, you have a very heated race for an office that paid surprisingly well at that time.
That's right. The sheriff's office was the best paid office in the county, paid up to $9,000 a year for the sheriff. The sheriff was probably certainly the most recognized official in the county. There were no state police. There probably weren't any city police. He was the law enforcement officer of the county, and he symbolized law and order, if you will. So for him to be killed in his office was really a big deal, a real insult to the community and to all the people, of course, that were related to it.
And the election of the man who was murdered really quickly after he took office was hotly contested by candidates sort of from all over the county.
That's right.
And there was there were irregularities that you talk about, that people talked about afterwards. Were they part of the dynamic that resulted in the shooting in the office?
What really was the background of the shooting is that in jockeying for who was going to run for sheriff, the person who was actually did the shooting, Sam Galloway, was from the southern part of the county. Roach was from the southern part of the county also, but he was now living in Mayfield. He had been a state legislator already. He'd been in the military. Of course, Galloway had also been in the Marines for 6 years. But in order to get Galloway out of the race so that he would have the southern vote, county vote to himself, he promised Galloway that he could become his deputy sheriff and that he would be able to run in 4 years, because in those days the sheriff couldn't succeed themselves. And that is really what was the background of this. And then he did hire Galloway as the sheriff, as his deputy. And then Galloway, Galloway finds out that he's going to be fired by the sheriff. That's really what is the background of what happened.
And it's a story about two men who are very similar, very good-looking guys, both of them.
Yes.
They both have great families.
Yes.
Very upstanding. They've met wonderful women. Yes. In a time when women are just coming into power. And they are surrounded by people in education.
Yeah. Five of the women I mentioned in the book are teachers. Amazing. Two of Sam Galloway's wives were teachers. Sam Galloway's mother was a teacher. And, of course, John Roach, the sheriff, was a teacher and had been a principal in the school. And John Roach's wife was particularly well-educated. They went to Western before there was a Murray State. They went to Western to school.
So there you have the scene, and then you have this shocking event. An event in an office with lots of men hanging around, and you go into, and these men are all deputies, and they're all part of the fabric of John T. Roach's administration as sheriff. They've been set up, and it happens, and the whole telling of the story is that there were so many people there that it was hard to figure out how to even deal with it from a legal standpoint.
You know, to have a shooting when there are seven or eight witnesses, it is amazing. You would think, boy, there'd be a real solution to this as to how to deal with it. And at least probably three of those people are deputy sheriffs. And they all see or should have seen what was going on and what happened. At the same time, you end up having a trial, or even in this case, multiple trials, to try to determine what really happened. But the key to this thing is you're still wondering about what were the state of mind of the two men that were involved, because that's what trials are really about. Is this an accident? Is it in a fit of passion? Is it a self-defense situation? The jury ultimately has to determine that. And those seven people who are standing there don't know that either. But they were all there.
And I must share with you all that Mr. Easley is not going to talk about the trial because you want to buy this book.
That's right. Yes, exactly. When you work on something for 3 years, you just like to sell it.
And I'm here to tell you that it's a really fast read because we get to see how Mr. Easley, the attorney, thinks about law and its practice. Let's shift to what's happening to the widow of the slain sheriff.
It's sad. It's sad. She has a daughter, and on Monday, she becomes a widow. And then almost immediately, there is this uprising by the community. 3,000 people sign a petition for the county judge to appoint her as the sheriff. This is the first time even that women could vote. And this poor county judge is put in the position of trying to say, I'm going to appoint a woman sheriff. At that very time, there was a desperado loose in the community. They couldn't catch him. He was goading the sheriff. And just to think that a woman was going to arrest this person, the county judge said, he talks about it. It's beautifully written in the newspaper. He said, if I do that, in 30 days they'll cool off and I'll be run out of this office.
The fact that he chose to publicly discuss his thought process was very interesting.
It's fascinating. He was willing to do it because he wanted the people to know what he went through to do it. But at any rate, the murder happens on Monday. On Friday, he appoints her sheriff, and she becomes Kentucky's first female sheriff, and perhaps the first female sheriff in the United States. I'm not sure about that and hadn't been able to find out.
And as her life progresses after being a sheriff, she continues to be right in the middle of things. Tell about Lois Roach's career.
She's an amazing woman. And fortunately, I was able to talk with her grandson, who is a professor at Wofford College in Spartanburg, South Carolina. He adored his grandmother, and he was able to tell me so much about her and about what she had done. She was really a tower of strength. Even the judge says, the county judge, and anyone who met her, they were amazed at her poise and ability and a very bright person. And she was totally devoted to her daughter. And that's what she always said. Doesn't my daughter, just because her daddy was killed, doesn't she have as much right as anyone else? And shouldn't you elect me sheriff? You know, she ran again and won.
Mm-hmm.
And this was at the time of the Alvin Barkley was coming on. Alvin Barkley had been beaten for governor in Kentucky, and then he turns around and runs for the Senate. Well, I'm sure Alvin Barkley knew John Roach very well. They were both young politicos. And Alvin Barkley, tapped her as his woman's campaign manager in Kentucky in his race for the Senate, which he won and ultimately becomes Vice President of the United States. So she stays in politics, and she runs, and she wins big. Really, when she runs.
Big, yeah.
Then she gets out, and she told her grandson. And he told me later, he said, politics was not a place for a woman with a child. And so she went back to Barron County, where she was from, for a short time. And then she moved to where her daughter was in North Carolina. And she taught there for 25 or 30 years in the Charlotte schools, and retired there. She was very active in Business and Woman's Professional Club, and she was very active in her church. I talked to some of the people in the church who had remembered her, and they were so complimentary of what a strong person she was. And you can look at her pictures and you can tell that.
So we've talked about the politics, we've talked about the murder, and the redemptive part of this story is partially due to Lois Roach. Because of her strong character, partially due to the preacher at the time who drew everyone together in a church, and it was a big funeral, and did a wonderful eulogy that you imagine from your long involvement with the Methodist Church. And there was another part of the redemption, the redemptive nature of the story. I've gone for two. What's the third?
The third was, how does a community react to a tragedy when their main law enforcement officer, the symbol of law and order in their community, is killed? How does it react to that? And that really amazed me. For the most part, the newspapers were wonderful there. The newspaper editor said some things. He called the community together. remember, this was a time when there was revenge killings. There were still hangings going on. If you remember in Murray at the time, in the 20s, when the governor had to come to Murray to keep a hanging from occurring, they had happened. One had happened in Mayfield in 1915. But what I saw here is that a newspaper stood up and reminded people who they were. And Mayfield people or Graves County people don't do this, which is really good. To the faith, the community, there were thousands of people at this funeral. The newspaper said thousands. And so that the faith of all these people is they are reminded again of who they are, that we don't do things like that. Good people like we are don't do things like that. So their newspapers, their faith, and then the courts. And I really marveled at how well these courts, how well they did. The lawyers were good. These were good lawyers. The judge stood tall in this trial. There was things lawyers do, but ultimately you saw the process of justice being carried on extremely well as it would be today, and perhaps even better. So those three things help a community heal, so that when I'm growing up in the 40s and 50s, I never heard of this story.
I'm thinking when you're talking about the lawyers and the trial, one of the things I'm gonna give a little bit away.
All right, fine.
Because when they first started, it was Flavius Martin for the prosecution and Pete C. for the defense. Mm-hmm. And when the trial first got started, it was a little rough. They were...
Oh, yes.
But the judge got them in. And we're not going to talk any more about that because we got a scoop. But you got to read about the trial because it really does give you an unusual insight into the lawyerly trade of the time. And the book is available. We're at the business part of this, Mr. Easley.
Well, it's at the Murray State. I have it at my law office. It's at the Murray State Bookstore.
Uh-huh.
And also, it is in Mayfield at Gibson's Pharmacy is there. It'll be in Paducah before long. I've had people request that I bring some down there, and I intend to do it. And then it's online at Butler Books out of Louisville. And you can get it there also.
Let me ask, what's the next one?
Oh, gee. That's probably 5 years down the road, if it takes as long
but
as this
But it's there,
one.
Isn't it?
Well, you're always thinking about it.
Thank you for being with us today.
Thank you, Kate. It's been a pleasure for me.
We've been talking with Sid Easley about his book, A Courthouse Tragedy, Politics, Murder, and Redemption in a Small Kentucky Town.